When you think of trauma, do you think of extreme events like war and violence? They are definitely connected, but what about breakups or humiliating experiences or grief? Would you consider those to be traumatic? They absolutely can be, and I think in extreme cases, we will readily categorize them as such, but in general, we're inclined to pass them off as not qualifying for the title. The fact is, 70% of adults have experienced a traumatic event, which means it's quite likely that you have, even if it isn't obvious to you, or at the very least, someone you are close to has. My hope is that this episode will give you the perspective to validate your experiences and observations, and encouragement to take steps to heal. You're listening to the Positively Living Podcast. I'm your host, Lisa Zarotny, founder of Positively Productive Systems, and a coach certified in time and stress management, helping clients make space for what matters most in their lives. Join me each episode and we'll talk about decluttering, stress management, habits, personalized productivity, gratitude, and so much more. I understand the overwhelm of life because I'm a wife, mom to kids and cats, and a former caregiver. I'm here to help you choose what's right for you so you can do less, live more, and breathe easier. Sound good? Let's get to it. Trauma is a current imprint of pain we've experienced, a physical manifestation of experience coming back as a reaction. That reaction, a trauma response, can impact every aspect of your life, from your relationships to productivity to careers and more. It threads its way through your experiences, forcing you to find coping mechanisms in unexpected ways. For example, did you know that keeping busy can actually be a trauma response? Or the inability to ask for help and the tendency to be ultra-independent? There is far more to this concept than you might expect, and that is why I welcome Mallory Jackson to the Positively Living Podcast today. Mallory is a professor of human services and chemical dependency counseling at SUNY Jefferson Community College. She holds master's degrees in public administration and counseling. She specializes in trauma-informed care and education within higher education, and along with teaching, she coordinates the Human Service and Chemical Dependency Internship Program at the college. She is married to her husband, Pete, a New York State Conservation Officer, and has two sons, Logan and Daniel, and a geriatric chocolate lab named Jack. Mallory and I became friends years ago. You probably couldn't guess how we met, but I reveal it in our conversation. When you hear her speak, you will understand how and why we stayed connected, and why I chose her to talk about this. Through years of coaching and organizing work, I began to connect grief and trauma to clutter, so I knew I wanted to share this topic. I believe we need to understand trauma from both a clinical and a humanitarian perspective. And we need to understand that we all have trauma to some degree. And we are not here to compare or to fix, but rather to become aware of why we do what we do and find the steps to heal and grow. Today we cover what trauma is, the causes of it, the responses, and the treatments. It's not a surprise that attacks and accidents were on the cause list, but it was an important reminder for me that ongoing stress, illness, and caregiving were as well. Then there are the less obvious causes like grief, humiliating experiences, breakups, sudden losses, which connect to grief. And most recently, our experiences in 2020 with COVID-19. Mallory described so many ways that trauma shows up, not only in the more obvious coping mechanisms like substance abuse and disordered eating, but in places like fear of success and trouble asking for help. She and I also geeked out science style on the brain, and guess what word makes a cameo again? Neuroplasticity. I first introduced it in episode 7 on the impact of stress, which is another word that makes an appearance repeatedly. We talk about the connection between trauma, shame, grief, rage, and stress, which is intense. But here's where it gets even better. When we know these connections and these responses, we can make huge shifts. We can use resiliency to change trauma's effect. We can adapt through simple wellness practices I share here. One of the most powerful? Gratitude. We can use the same brain response we experience from trauma to create a powerful impact that aids in our resiliency and happiness. Like grief, which I talk about with Katie Russler in episode 14, we can grow through trauma. Mallory suggests a variety of responses if you're looking to learn more about trauma. In addition to books by Melanie Beattie, Anne Lamott, and Brené Brown, she recommends The Body Keeps the Score by Bessel van der Kolk, Maybe You Should Talk to Someone by Lori Gottlieb, and It Didn't Start With You by Mark Wolin, which is about generational trauma. One of the biggest takeaways from our conversation today is how important support is to our well-being and resilience. If you are in need of telehealth connections, please reach out to me and I will find recommendations. I invite you to join the Positively Grateful Series community, a free group open year-round with quarterly coaching and prompts that encourages you to make gratitude a habit. If you want to learn more about it, listen to episode 4. And if you think life coaching would be right for you, let's hop on a connection call, which you can book from my website, positivelyproductive.com, or message me directly through the show notes. There are many support systems out there ready to help you thrive. I encourage you to find them. Welcome, Mallory Jackson, to the Positively Living Podcast. We have been friends for years, and we go way back to when my husband and I were your wedding photographers. And I'm so grateful we've stayed in touch this whole time. And we've followed not only each other's lives as they unfolded with careers and kids and all the stuff, but we've also followed each other's spirits of service. And what I mean by that is I am in awe of your heart and your world perspective. And I'm so grateful that we connected on this level. And it's why I knew you were the best person to join me today to talk about the tender topic of trauma.
Thank you so much for having me and welcoming me into your space. I am not just a fan, but I feel as though I am a super fan of you from our lifetimes. And I call these our encore careers because we've known each other through our other careers. And I feel like both of us are really, really in our hum. We're humming along. We are in our zen. We're in our zone. We're, you know, to add on to that amazing podcast from Michelle Perry when she was your guest, you know, when you're living your purpose, it just opens up everything.
Yeah. And it all flows. So speaking of flowing, would you share with us what you are up to now, a little bit more about you and, you know, who you help and what makes you light up, Mallory?
Sure. So I am living in the North Country, the Great White North, in Jefferson County, New York, teaching at SUNY Jefferson Community College and their Human Services and Chemical Dependency Counseling academic program. So what I am essentially doing is I help people help people. That's kind of how I define myself. My role here is a change agent for people who want to find a life of service and make a career out of it. Most of the students that I work with are freshmen and sophomores, new to the academic experience. That doesn't mean they're new to life. Many of the students I serve are what I would deem non-traditional. These are people who have lived through some stuff, Lisa. Lived through some hardships that we can't even imagine. They've suffered through loss. They've suffered through addiction. They've suffered through really difficult relationships with families. And really what they're trying to do is navigate through a new world for themselves. And oftentimes I find that people who have been hurt the most have the most interest in helping others from being as hurt as they've been. Really, that's what lights me up. I know that I have a story just as everybody else does, and finding a way to navigate my own rough childhood, my ability to get through very rigorous academic programs. I have 2 master's degrees. I have been in academia for over 10 years. I started as a human service professional working for the local Cornell Cooperative Extension for many years in their nutrition education program. And spent a lot of time in inner city Poughkeepsie, working with low-income families, victims of abuse and neglect, worked in domestic violence services. You know, I feel like where I've been able to meet people where they are in their lowest moments has really given me a lot of compassion and empathy and grace for what we're doing now on the other side and training people how to help others.
One of the things in all that you described is this idea of the wounded healer that I think is so beautiful. And I think we both have that. And it was interesting when you and I were talking during one of our many chats, this idea came up that we could both have trauma in our lives. And it was this discovery, this idea, spoiler alert, everybody, I'm going to bring it up right away, that we all have it. And that's why I wanted to talk with you about that today. And it's so beautiful what you're doing, teaching others, helping them understand. It's not just to help others, but to help themselves as well. So I would love if we could start with trauma. Like, what is it? I already answered who has it, but I'd like to know more about that. Let's start with the basics. Help everyone understand, because I think this is a classic case of a word that's used so much and we don't really understand it.
I agree. I think you're right. This has become a buzzword. It's a buzzword in the general sense of the word. In the therapy world, this is not new. This is a term. This is an experience that everybody has it at a certain level. Trauma is very personal. It is technically defined as an event that overwhelms the central nervous system and altering the way we process and recall memories. However, trauma is not the story of something that happened, but rather the current imprint of our pain and the horror and the fear that is living inside a person. So it is the physical manifestation of the experience. Our body has no way to differentiate between whether an emotion is actually happening in front of us or if it's happened a long time ago, 5 minutes ago, whatever. Our brain does not compartmentalize information that way. So it can be really overwhelming for someone to have a rush if they've been triggered and feel something all of a sudden, to that their body feels as though it is back in that same space. That traumatic event could be happening right then and there, but it's not. So it's really hard, Lisa. And I think one of the important kind of, I'm a data person, I'm a data nerd through and through, God mm-hmm. bless it, that is who I am. 70% of adults, 70% of adults have experienced some type of traumatic event. Let me break this down. That's 223 and a half million people. So I think what we deal with is that trauma is always going to come back as a reaction, not a memory. It is a physical manifestation. Oh, I get chills. Every time I talk about this, I get my chills. Do you feel that a little bit?
Ooh. Yeah. Yeah. It's an overwhelming feeling. And again, this is why I wanted to talk about this, because if you are listening to this and you're feeling the chills too, and you're thinking, yeah, I've had it. That's what I want for you today, is to be able to acknowledge that, because having awareness and acknowledging are our first steps in understanding and then being able to handle it in some fashion.
Right. And so I think it's makes sense to talk a little bit about what can cause this.
Yes.
Okay. We break it down in three categories. Trauma can be caused by a one-time event, like a violent attack, an accident, a weather event, believe it or not, can cause trauma.
Sure.
If you think about ever living through a hurricane or a tornado, that can be very traumatic.
Yeah.
Another cause is an ongoing relentless stress. And Lisa, I'm speaking your language as the caregiver guru of the universe. Okay. Battling an illness, living in a crime-ridden neighborhood can cause this. Bullying, neglect, abuse. And the big one here that I know you feel, caregiving.
Yeah.
Caregiver trauma is a really, really under-researched but very prevalent form of trauma. We're just now seeing research out there about parental trauma, let alone caregiver trauma. So that's a second. And then the third, which I think is really important, and so many people don't realize that this last kind of formation is commonly overlooked causes, including breakups, sudden loss, sudden grief, and humiliating experiences. Hi, my name is Mallory. I was the only redhead in my school. I had lots of humiliating experiences as a child. And it seems as though a little flippant for me to bring up. But guess what? When you're a child and you get teased or you get bullied or you get whatever, that physical stuff lives in the body as a memory. And then we have a reaction centered around it. It's really fascinating to think that our body is carrying and holding on to them. And we'll talk a little bit more about how it shows up in your life later, because it stays there.
Right. And I just think it's so important. And thank you for laying out the different kinds, because there's no doubt. And I think we very quickly go to this idea of trauma as being, you know, PTSD. And when you're in war and when you can think of and violent attacks and things of that nature. And it's so hard, I think, when you have other experiences that really do belong in that category, because again, I think that we feel like we have to compare somehow, and that, well, I didn't have it as bad, or that's not even remotely like being attacked violently. I cared for my mom, you know, it's like, and when you start to do that comparison, I think you do yourself a disservice in so many ways. And we'll understand more why as we talk about the impact and what it does and how it just changes our perception and everything that we do. And the other thing that I think is so important that you brought up was this idea of chronic stress, okay? Because that's something I'm talking about ad nauseum, where we have all these different stressors, and it's so important that we find ways to relieve them, that we find ways to remove them if we can. And I also have to bring up in this whole collection, just 2020, COVID. I mean, we're recording that right now. Hopefully there will come a time when you're listening to this and that's just not the thing anymore. But I think it's so important that we acknowledge and honor the impact that it's had on all of us.
It sure has. And, you know, as a trained mental health counselor by career, and now in academic, I'm not diagnosing people right now, but I do have my own thoughts about what the next big diagnosis is going to be. You've heard it here first, friends. What I see coming down the pike post 2020 is going to be a variation of what I'm calling acute onset post-traumatic stress response due to COVID. And that's a very fancy way for saying we are going to be wearing the emotional trauma of this pandemic for decades. And the way I explain this to my students is that I am training you to treat epidemics within a pandemic phase of living. And this is what helpers are doing. Our jobs didn't stop when COVID started. They ramped up. We're seeing way, way more people accessing telehealth therapies, which I think is such a blessing that we can still do that work remotely. But as you know, it can also make things more complex to not feel like you can get out of your house and see your therapist. Some people love that face-to-face interaction, which I can understand. Yeah. But the trauma of living through something like this is going to be within the fabric of our lives for quite a long time. And so the sooner we acknowledge that we're feeling some of the traumatic impact, I think of the people I see with their masks on when they're in the grocery store and they start to hyperventilate themselves. Mm-hmm. You're having a traumatic experience because the fear is overtaking your ability for your brain to say, hey, you're okay.
Yeah. I mean, and masks, that's a huge thing. There can be so many obvious, you know, traumatic experiences that can then trigger that. But just simply the fact that we have our mouths covered, mm-hmm. again, that kind of leads us into, you know, the triggering events and what we're seeing as responses. And I'll just reiterate that it's across the board that we're experiencing this. Of course, I'm thinking about our first responders, and those in the medical industry, in all facets of the medical industry are are experiencing such increased levels of stress and trauma, but also those of us who maybe are not on the front lines are still experiencing it in varying degrees. So take what you will from this wherever you are and understand that you are also experiencing this too. And what you can take away from today will help those that you may also be witnessing doing this.
Absolutely. One of a million rules in my work is that we don't compare pain. Also don't compare joy. We are living our own independent life and everyone's just trying to get by. So let's show some grace instead.
Beautiful. Thank you. Yes. So it's whatever you are experiencing, you are experiencing. And we are here validating this 100% more if we're able. Now, what's next? So when we're seeing this in ourselves and others, what are we looking for?
Oh, goodness. So there's so many ways that trauma shows up in our lives. Okay. I'm going to kind of rattle off some of the more probably relatable ones. And then I'll go into some ones that are going to make you go, uh-oh, is that what that is? Because that's how it usually goes. So procrastination, fear of failure, ultra independence. Where are my ultra independence out in the audience? I know you're out there. I know you're listening. Fear of success. Ooh, that's a big one. Need to plan for everything. Hi, my name is Mallory and I was a traumatized kid, so I plan for everything. Trouble asking for help. Ooh boy, caregivers out there. Trouble asking for help. Codependence. We'll send you some resources on how to deal with the codependence. Fear of abandonment. A desire to fix other people. And this is where I come into play. Students will say, oh, no, Mallory, but I'm here to fix other people. I want to be a helper. I'm not here to fix you. I'm here to remind you that you are worthy of fixing yourself. That is my job as a helper. It is not my job to fix a person. It is to remind them and teach them that they are worthy of helping themselves feel better. Now, let's get into the ones that might show up a little different. Substance use disorders, shame, big time shame. Shame and trauma hold hands and walk down through the fire together, my friends. Domestic violence, unhealthy relationships. These are platonic. These are work. These are romantic, whatever it is. Disordered eating is a huge trauma response. Depression and anxiety. I think we could make that leap pretty quickly to understand why the connection is there. Long-term physical health issues like migraines, like irritable bowel syndrome, those show up as trauma disorders. And so when you think about how they show up to you, they can vary, of course, and they can ebb and they can flow through the life cycle. Children sometimes show different responses than adults do. But we also can see some of these kind of longitudinal things show up. Like you can be fine for a few years and then something will happen and then you'll go to the doctor and they'll be like, I don't know. We don't really know what's going on. It must be autoimmune. It must be something that we can't really pinpoint. And then they're going to ask you if you're stressed. They're going to ask you if something's happened to you. And that's where the conversation gets interesting.
Yeah. And that stress thing, I'm going to keep highlighting that. I'm calling this now an auditory highlight. When you're having a conversation and someone says something, you're like, ooh, that's good. And you want to take like a highlighter and highlight it. And I just want to keep highlighting the amounts of times that we come up with something relating to stress or how it comes back to stress. And a lot of the disorders that you're talking about, I mean, if you look at chronic distress and the connections. Yeah, you see how it's all connected? And shame, trauma, grief, stress. They're all, like you said, holding hands and hanging out, rage,
anger, disgust, contempt. Oh my goodness, we are a bevy of traumatic feelings. And all of those words you can feel in your body. If you sit with those feelings long enough, you can feel them in different areas of your body. And, you know, in addition to my counseling work, I am a Reiki master. I am deeply connected with our body and how we are able to express our fully spiritual self. And we do a lot of work with okay, where do you feel that? Like, you want to talk about shame? You know where I feel shame? I feel it in my shoulders. I feel it in my neck. I feel like I have to shrink myself down when I'm feeling shame.
I just started to stretch my shoulders as you said that. And when you said rage, I realized that I was like gripping my fists and, you know, feeling that. So, and again, these are responses that we're having. And something else that you brought up, I want to make sure to, again, highlight to bring out this idea is that when we're experiencing these things, these responses, it's as though the traumatic experience were happening.
Correct. Yes. Right. Your body has now elicited all of the hormones in your brain. Your brain does some fun things, and we can talk about that and shortly, and how our brain actually picks and chooses what to focus on. But yes, when you are experiencing a traumatic recall, we'd call it, your physical body is exactly where it was when that trauma existed the first time, because it has imprinted in the cells of your body.
Right.
And so it's going to feel exactly the same. And there are four major trauma responses that we go through.
Drum roll.
And these are all probably fairly familiar to some of your listeners if they have any interest in kind of mental health and trauma at all. Fight, flight, freeze, and the less popular but still very important and something most of us are probably more likely to do is fawn. Okay. So really quick, just for your first time listeners, fight, of course, is our response that we're going to fight back, talk back. I'm going to defend myself. Yep. People who stay in that trauma response for a long enough time become what we would define as a bully. People who have a fight response and they stay in that response and that feels good for them. It's not healthy, but it could feel okay for them. They're the people that become bullies. Okay. Flight. This is easily defined. These are going to be folks that their trauma response is going to be leaving, hiding, run away. Get me out of here. These folks tend to become workaholics. They are looking for a way to flitter out of the ether and go and do something else. And
distract.
Then they will get, exactly, they will get deeply lost in their productivity, which becomes a spiritual component, which we'll talk about when we talk about the relationship between productivity and trauma.
Okay.
The freeze response. This is when you shut out, you numb out. This is, you can numb with wine, you can numb with food, you can numb with shopping, you can numb with whatever you want. Really doesn't matter. Pick your poison. Or you dissociate. That's the fancy clinical word for convincing your brain that this is no longer something you're going to focus on. Folks that like to freeze become the couch potatoes. They're just going to sit there Netflixing and chilling, watching all the Marvel movies in order from start to finish. It happens.
Ask me how I know.
This might be a little personal, but this is something that's important for us to recognize. Okay. Those are the common ones.
Right.
And fawn is the one that I know that you and I really kind of wanted to bear out because it's much more common than people realize.
Yes.
Fawning is when we please and appease and befriend because it feels good to make others feel good, even when they're making us feel terrible. And people who fawn are going to become the people pleasers. Hi, my name is Mallory. I'm a people pleaser. I'm a recovering people pleaser.
Yes.
And I loved it. In your last podcast, Michelle was so great. She said, I'm a recovering social worker. I said, oh girl, that speaks to me. Goodness gracious. But with fawning, what happens is our system determines that our best chance for survival is to cooperate with whomever is causing us that stress, that trauma. So those of us who have weird relationship with our parents, who were constantly trying to just keep the peace and just show up so everyone will shut up and leave you alone, that is a response to trauma because it wasn't safe for you to show up as who you were and instead had to become somebody else.
Right. And again, with all of these responses, this is coming from a place where you are trying to, if I understand this correctly, you're trying to cope, find control, and also what you just said, best chance for survival. So you are searching for safety.
Yes. And ultimately, at the end of the day, whenever a trauma response shows up in whatever it is truly because you no longer feel safe in your body. And where does trauma live? In the body. So until we're able to manage coping techniques that allow us to reclaim some of that safety, mm-hmm. we can't function and the trauma keeps repeating.
Okay. So I think it's time to move on to geeking out about the brain a bit, get into productivity, and then we'll get into, well, what can we do with this? But yeah.
Sounds good. So what I really like about the brain is how functional it is and how it's adapted over a long, long, long time. So the brain kind of So let me back this up. So the brain does not function effectively if we experience trauma. And so we have to look at how a brain develops first. So a brain develops from the bottom up. The brain stem is where we start, and that controls breathing, heart rate, all that good stuff. And then the next thing that develops is the amygdala. I'm going to use some science words here, but I'm not going to go too deep into them, I promise. Amygdala, that focuses on fear, memory, and emotions. That's kind of driving the bus, those initial kind of recall. Then we get into the hippocampus. This is where our fight or flight is activated. This is where those trauma responses are going to start to say, okay, I need to adapt. Something's happening. I need to run away from the lion who's chasing me. I'm not a gazelle. This doesn't make sense. It's also in the hippocampus where all of our memories are stored and retrieved. Okay. So we've got those early kind of functioning parts of the brain. That's going to be breathing and basics, kind of some fear, some memory. And then we're going to get more and more complex. Trauma in the hippocampus is going to be a pretty big deal. And then we, thank goodness, have started to develop over the last however many thousands of years, the prefrontal cortex. That is our executive functioning part of our brain, which gives us a lot of that emotional regulation. The more trauma you have, the less developed or damaged the various areas, these four areas of the brain can be. Okay. So what we see now that developmental trauma is that early trauma that we talk about that can happen anywhere from conception, from what happens when your mom is pregnant with you. If are you drinking? Are you not getting enough sleep? Are you stressed? That can start developmental trauma and then goes up to the age about 2 or 3. And then we see other forms of trauma that kind of go through the life cycle. But the brain is really, really fascinating. So when something reminds traumatized people of the past, their right brain reads it as a traumatic event and pretends or acts as if it's happening in the present moment. So we have rational side of the brain. We have the creative side of the brain. It's going to do some fancy things because its job is to keep you alive. That's right. Literally its job.
Yep. I like that. Survival. And I keep saying survival. Our brains, I just want what's best for us. And they'll do weird things, and they will tell you like, oh, that, you know, that really seems like a lot of work, Lisa. Are you sure you want to do that? I don't think so. And I did want to mention, mm-hmm. and I'm hoping to kind of spin this just very quickly, is that, so we have survival here and we have our brains responding to this trauma and feeling like they're in the moment. But conversely, I always love taking a concept and being able to use it for the powers of good. Sure. When we practice gratitude and we experience gratitude and put ourselves in that position, does it not also experience in that way where we're in that moment too, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Talk about fully present, right? You bring yourself to your present moment. Gratitude is really good at this, compassion and empathy. Holy smokes. You want to talk about hot wiring connection? Practice empathy, practice compassion, practice gratitude, because while the brain does its own thing, we also have this wonderful concept of neuroplasticity.
Yes.
a fancy schmancy word for saying that our brain is really, really intelligent and can do some amazing things to help not just have you survive, but bring you from surviving to thriving. And that is the dream, right? You Yes. can actually overcome a lot of trauma. Your brain can function differently. And the treatment methods for people who are recovering from trauma, there are three major avenues. And I am a deep believer and a follower of Bessel van der Kolk. He is the modern father of trauma. And so for any of your listeners, absolutely would suggest getting his book, The Body Keeps the Score. If you're feeling especially connected to this topic and want to learn more about it, this is kind of the trauma Bible, I call it. So he explains in his book about the three avenues for treatments of trauma, treatment methods. The first, of course, is top down. This is going to be talking, reconnecting with others, allowing yourself to know and understand what's going on, and processing the memories. That's your traditional talk therapy, Lisa, right? So that's mm-hmm. going to be your pretty typical stuff. The second treatment method, medications and technology. And the medications can actually go in and help alter the chemicals of the brain. That's the beautiful part of pharmacology, is that it can help change that. But then technology also, there are some really cool methods. EMDR therapy is a big one out there for trauma. It's eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, such a fancy word for a really cool techie treatment. Mm. It helps change how the brain is organizing the information. And then finally, the third avenue that we look at, and this is all neuroplasticity, right? We're trying to increase the gray matter of the brain. We're trying to kind of fix the way the brain is working and thinking. Mm-hmm. The bottom-up technique is supposed to help recalibrate your autonomic nervous system. So this is going to be through all the good things we talk about: breath, movement, touch, those basic human elements of feeling safe. And know that your body is here to serve you. And that alone, those sorts of treatments help hotwire different areas of the brain and help us change. Gratitude, compassion, empathy, perspective taking, active listening, all of these wonderful communicative activities also do all of those things for us. So it's kind of a nice thing to add in.
So many of the topics that I talk about on this podcast can be things that can help us almost want to say is calm trauma or calm the trauma response, really, right? In a way.
Correct. Yes, yeah. It absolutely does. And I think that so many times, especially in our kind of modern culture, we dismiss the practices of gratitude and compassion. Do you know what people who are recovering from trauma talk about? How grateful they are to have lived through something so difficult. The beauty of living through trauma is fostering what we call resiliency. I know you've talked about it quite a bit in your podcasts, which is such a wonderful thing. And so, you know, just to kind of think a little bit about resiliency for a second, mm-hmm. one of the ways that resiliency can be optimized, lots of different ways, but it's generally used to describe the capacity of a person to successfully adapt and recover in highly stressful or traumatic experiences. Okay, so while trauma is a very powerful influence, don't get me wrong, it's deeply powerful, it mm-hmm. doesn't mean that everyone is affected in the same way, right? Some people are naturally pretty resilient. They're resilient because people taught them how to be resilient. And in those early years, the people who teach you resilience are your caregivers, your mm-hmm. parents. You know, so when we talk about early onset trauma with children, if they didn't have good adults teaching them how that they were worthy and they were strong and they're smart and they're capable, as adults, it's really hard to imagine that people could see you as those things that you're supposed to be learning in childhood. But a resilient person is going to be able to identify areas of support that exist within themselves and also exist within their community. And we have to, we as parents, kind of the royal we, you and I as mothers, this is one of the major things that we do, is we're teaching our children how to be a functional adult who can learn the skills that we think are so important and live the values that we're teaching them. there are so many people out there, you know, that don't realize that we parent the way we were parented. That's psychologically proven, right? So I would like to think I parent slightly different than my mother. I know I parented very differently than how my grandmother parented my mother, right? And so we do some of these things to kind of put our spin on it. But those basic resiliency tactics are simple things like, did you hug your children? Did you, you know, tell them you were proud of them when they came home from school with their artwork? Did you let them fail and remind them that you're proud of them anyway? You know, these are small resiliency tactics that go a long way into creating a functional adult. If you are an adult and you didn't have all of that, you have to do a lot of that inner work. Those are healing some wounds internally. Therapists get paid lots of money to help with that, would suggest it, but it's also one of the wonderful attributes of life coaches. And that's why one of the things I so appreciate about you and the work you do, and you and I have talked about this, you know, counselors, therapists, life coaches, their goals are the same. Their goals are their clients being independent and being happy and living life. The modalities we use are different, but the goal is independence and happiness. And that I think is beautiful. So if your listeners are saying, oh my gosh, do I need to run to a therapist? Maybe you do. I'm not here to be your clinician, but I am here to say your support system, whatever that looks like, is such an important part of recovering from any trauma.
That's right. And understanding that sometimes I know that I have, when I'm coaching, have helped someone understand where I can help them and where I cannot. And that is something that we consistently do, especially when we first begin to work together, take inventory of what's happening. And when we find those deeper pieces, if you will, sometimes it's what I can do is shine a light on it and then say, okay. And I have many, many clients who also go to therapy. I mean, I highly recommend it because more that you can use different modalities, the better your chances, the faster things can happen. It's the same idea of saying when you're doing time management, or, you know, that you think about energy management and you think about how you're scheduling and you take things off your list that don't belong, decluttering, you know, and all the things. It's like when a runner trains for a marathon or some kind of Olympic race, they're not only building muscle to gain speed, but they're also making sure that their body is as light as possible and that they aerodynamically, you know, they do this with cars and with swimmers. And, you know, I mean, they're shaving things like crazy because they want to, you know, so they're coming at it from different angles. And so I would agree that there are different ways that different kinds of helpers can help, but reaching out, asking for the help, seeking it out. If you're in a place where you're feeling like, yeah, there is some trauma going on. If you aren't ready for therapy yet, if you aren't ready for a counselor, you're not sure, you know, maybe a life coach can start to bring it to light. Or absolutely, conversely, if you're like, no, I think something's going on, start with that. And I have actually sent people away to say, you aren't having productivity issues. You're in need of support through therapy.
And that is such an important connection. And I know on the alternative side, my referral base has a bevy of wonderful life coaches, because when people transition out of therapy, guess what? Their support system is still a very integral part of their success. And I think that why on earth wouldn't you want to add more people who are truly out for your best interest? I think it's a wonderful attribute. And I think it's important to note too, as part of the discussion, that in healing, especially as I get into some of the methods that I would really suggest using, healing is being able to cope with and coexist with pain, not the absence of pain. We're always going to have stuff. Okay. So again, healing is being able to cope with and coexist with pain. As long as you are resilient, you can get through nearly anything on the planet. You really can. But fostering the resilience is going to be key. There's always going to be pain. And I really love that your first point about how do we fix this is, you know, first you have to get yourself safe, of course, right? You have to be in a safe situation. Your fight or flight or freeze are going to come into play if you're physically unsafe. That's the first step, of course. I always suggest moving your body. Yoga is actually the number one implemented physical recovery, trauma recovery modality, because it encourages the individual to see their body as this magnificent, safe space where they are stretching and they are focused on the breath and their body is giving them what they need in that moment. Yoga is incredibly powerful. Mindfulness, I mean, my goodness, we could talk for hours about the benefits of presence and mindfulness in your life, not just from blood pressure and cardiovascular health, but for mental health and spiritual health, connecting to a power that's higher than your own. It's beautiful. Grounding exercises, holy smokes. I mean, you know, you just, before we started, you know, Lisa, and your grounding exercise with your breath work. I'm so happy that that's something that you incorporate, because those are some of the major kind of fixes. But can we talk about productivity for a second and how that relates?
Absolutely, because... not. No, yes.
I hate talking about productivity.
That is just, it's not my thing, but okay, you're the guest. So.
Well, okay, I guess so. So what I think is really important that I think I kind of skipped over, because again, I could talk to you about this stuff all day long, is we have to look at what the productivity is. What's driving the bus with your productivity, right? So productivity is a heck of a coping mechanism. It's really, really, not all coping mechanisms are bad. So before anybody starts saying, ugh, she's saying it's a coping. What am I coping? We're coping with being a human in the world.
Hello. Yeah. 2020.
Hello, 2020. We all need a coping mechanism. If the productivity is rooted in a sense of or need to be busy all the time, that's what I would consider a trauma response, right? It's that would actually be like a flight when you think about it, right? So, but what's important here is that we know what is the productivity about, because if the productivity is something that brings you sensibility, brings you really perspective, brings you an opportunity to recount and recap all the things in your life that make sense, it's actually one of the most positive coping mechanisms that people can use. And I don't think we talk enough about the kind of extra benefits. So some say, let go of needing to do everything, focus on being. I love that as a Reiki person. I'm like, yes, just be. But the human experience doesn't allow us to just be all the time. If you're getting me to meditate, if you're getting me to be present, that's probably all you're going to get, because I do see that leaning into productivity, the deep work that's done there. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, the cleansing, the purging, the studying, the focusing, all of that stuff is really, really wonderful. And so I always go to what's driving the bus? What's driving the productivity bus? Is it for good? Is it for not so good? Is it to your benefit or is it to your detriment? And I see that your clients are always looking for ways to incorporate productivity in their life in a holistic way. That's the kind of productivity you want driving the bus.
Right. The meaning behind it, what we're talking about all the time. And thank you for that, because that is, it's in a nutshell what I'm trying to help with.
Oh. Where
we, funny that, isn't that weird? I know, what a quinky dink. it's this idea that we are being productive in order to make space for what matters, in order to live more and experience more and be connected and experience, like you said, happiness, joy, experience life in all of it, be able to process things, to be resilient. Productivity can bring you those things, but that's so good. What you're saying is what's driving the bus, because, and I think what you're making the distinction of, I describe as being productive versus being busy.
I love that. Yes. That's excellent. That's yes. Perfect. Because busy is the coping mechanism that we don't want. That's a trauma response. That's a, okay, what else can I do so I don't look at my own stuff? So I don't have to feel my feelings. So I don't have to engage.
Or the busy badge of honor, where we find value or we find worth in what we're doing as opposed to being.
Oof. And you know what could have happened if instead of that's being the story that we tell ourselves all the time, like, I'm only worth it if I'm busy. If instead somebody said, I'm so grateful for you just sitting with me in this moment and being with me.
Yes.
I mean, wow, what a different energy behind, I don't need anything from you. That's one of the things I say to my boss. Anytime I walk into her office, I love to say hello to her. And she's such a light in my life. And I just adore her. And I'll walk in and I'll say, Jerry, I don't need anything. I just want to say hi. And it's the intention behind it. Like, I know everybody's got stuff going on, but I'm choosing to say hello to you. I'm choosing to enter into a discussion. And people feel your energy first. That's always how it's going to work, right? So if you're busy to be busy, I think you need to reconnect with something in yourself of what are you trying to be busy from? Because you are worthy of just being here in the space with us.
Right. You bring value just by showing up.
I love it.
I think that is the perfect place for us to transition into a little bit of fun and a little bit of snippets of inspiration, because obviously you didn't, you know, bring enough.
Mm. Yes, I have so much good stuff. Maybe another time we'll do a part two.
Part two, honestly. Yeah, this is so amazing. But I want everyone to take this with them now and understand they have trauma. This is how it shows up. This is what they can do, and to be encouraged that there may be things you're doing already that will help. Keep doing it. Be encouraged to know that those things that you're doing help and will keep helping. So that's amazing. All right, let's wrap this up with a little fun for starters. The song that always makes me dance is...
Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
You know it.
Yes, I love it. Cyndi Lauper, kicking it old school. Anytime it comes on, it goes whoop right up on the dial, and I love it.
Well, it's going on the Spotify playlist, everyone. So that's fantastic. How about the quote or mantra I share most often is?
So this is an education thing. I have lots of them. So this was hard for me, but the one I think is so important to me right now is, we tell ourselves so many stories. Here's to making room for beautiful ones.
Oh, that is so good.
I know. You feel it, right? I do. The stories we tell ourselves, let's make room for some really, really beautiful ones instead of the yucky ones.
Yes, let's make room for some beautiful ones. Okay, how about a book, app, or resource that makes my life easier?
Oh my goodness, I just finished reading Burnout, Unlocking the Stress Cycle by Emily and Amelia Nagoski. They are twin sisters. It is a game changer, Lisa. It is a game changer for anybody, women. There's a whole chapter on patriarchy, by the way, but women in general and what we have done to perpetuate a burnout cycle and how to unlock the stress cycle and get out of burnout. What a gift. It was game changing. Loved it.
Okay, that's going on the list. And speaking of books, I know you have a few more. You mentioned The Body Keeps Score, right?
Yes, The Body Keeps the Score by Dr. Bessel van der Kolk. I also, if you're into the trauma world and you want to learn more about that, Mark Wolin wrote It Didn't Start With You. And this is about intergenerational trauma. It's about the trauma that you're carrying from your grandparents and your great grandparents. Oof. Maybe You Should Talk to Someone by Lori Gottlieb is one of my greatest general reads of the year. She is a licensed social worker working in California. And these are stories of her clients. And it's so beautifully told. Really, really lovely.
Okay. These are excellent. Mm-hmm. I will link to all of these in the show notes so they will be easy for you to find. Let's end on some gratitude. What or whom are you grateful for today, Mallory?
You know, I would cop out and say that I'm so grateful for you, which is true. I am deeply grateful for you. I think, you know, having an opportunity to come and connect with you is something that I'm just so excited for as a super fan and as someone who has just adored you and your beautiful family all these years, and the joy that you bring to us and the memories that I get to bring out every time I take up my wedding album is such a blessing. So I have to say it's you. I just do.
Well, I'll share that with my husband because And well, I'm going to totally cop out and say I am grateful for you. Truly, what you've brought here, how freely you've given to us and to help us and to continue to be a helper in this world. It's incredible. I'm so grateful for you and all that you do. So thank you, Mallory, for shining your light in this world and for sharing it with us today.
Thanks a million. Anytime.
If you're trying not to think about it, it's time to heal it. Bessel A. van der Kolk.
Thank you for joining me on the Positively Living podcast. Your time is precious, and I'm honored you chose to spend it with me. Would you like to further explore the topics you've heard and implement what inspires you? Could you use some coaching support? What if you could attend a private Q&A with my guests and access bonus content? You can do all that and more in the Positively Living membership community. Check the link in the show notes or head to positivelyproductive.com/membership to enroll. I look forward to having you join me next episode and in the community. Until then, keep it positive and keep making space for what matters most.